Saga Egmont presents Secrets of Clearwater Castle by Emma Davis, read by Jess Nesling. For Vic. 1. In all the time that Alan's been gone, Jess has never told Lowry she'll feel better soon or that time is a great healer. She just hugs her when she cries and tells her she's sorry she's having such a bad day. This never resorting to glib platitudes is one of the things Lowry loves about Jess. It isn't that her other friends don't care, but what do you say to a grieving widow? There's no manual for this kind of thing, particularly not for someone in their early 30s. It's awkward, so mostly people avoid the subject altogether. Or worse, refrain from mentioning Alan's name, as if he never existed, as if his and Lowry's shared life simply never happened. They don't mean to be unkind, far from it, but given that death is the only certainty in life, Lowry sometimes wishes it wasn't such a taboo subject. So when she opens her front door to find Jess standing there, with a warm smile and a packet of chocolate biscuits, Lowry knows her friend has guessed how much she's dreading this day. She should have sorted out Alan's things much sooner. She knows that. But when he died, she just couldn't face it. Their whole lives were still ahead of them. Lowry wasn't ready to be a widow. And with Wren so poorly too, Lowry had barely enough strength to look after her daughter and keep her world turning, let alone deal with anything else. So Lowry let time roll by. She moved Alan's things into the spare bedroom and there they've stayed for 2 long years. Until now. Jess hands Lowry the biscuits, wiggling her shoulders.
Blimey, it's freezing out here. It's April for heaven's sake. Shouldn't it be warm by now?
She grins and steps into the hallway where she sheds her coat and bag, hanging them over the polished banisters, just like she always does. Lowry has a perfectly good cupboard in the hall, but that's not Jess's style. Lowry does organised. Jess does clutter. That's just the way it is. Then Jess turns and subjects Lowry to one of her long stares, the kind that misses nothing, the one that assesses all there is to know. I'm fine, honestly, says Lowry, knowing Jess won't believe her. Jess's eyes narrow. She regards Lowry for a second longer before her face brightens again.
Right then, let's get the kettle on, shall we?
And not waiting for an answer, she never does, she heads straight for the kitchen.
How was Wren this morning?
Asks Jess, taking down 2 mugs from a cupboard. Same as usual. Sailed through the school gate with a wide smile and scarcely a backward glance. That's one good thing at least.
So you think she'll be okay?
Lowry nods. You know Wren. Nothing much gets her down. She makes friends with everyone, so moving is just a big adventure for her. Plus, her Auntie Susan has always spoiled her rotten, so why wouldn't she want to live close by? Alan always said Lowry was small and mighty, but Lowry is nothing in comparison to Wren, and it kills her how he'll never see the person Wren is turning out to be. Born too early, wrinkled and helpless, with huge eyes and pale blue-veined skin, her name chose her rather than the other way around. And she'll always be their little bird. She had to fight for the first 3 years of her life, struggling through chest infection after chest infection, her little lungs desperately trying to suck in enough air to stay alive. They thought they were going to lose her when pneumonia struck, but, miraculously, Wren came through it, even though Alan didn't. After that, Wren got better and stayed better too, as if the universe decided to stop giving her a hard time. Lowry likes to think that Alan had a hand in that, though, as if, when he died, a tiny spark of him somehow found its way into his daughter. Now, Wren is small and mighty and fearless, and Lowry wishes she was more like her. Jess is quiet for a moment.
Lowry, you know you don't have to go, don't you? She says. Just because Susan declared it ought to be doesn't mean there are no other options. I'm sure we can think of something.